We've crossed the line to Friday, and that means it's time for Week in Review. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. First up on the agenda, Foxconn. We learned this week the state will not provide subsidies to a glass company that wants to move in close to Foxconn to be in its supply chain. What do you think about this? And much of the southeastern part of the state is now exempt from federal limits on smog pollution. Are you concerned about environmental effects and air quality, or is this no big deal? 800-642-1234. Let's bring in the roundtable. Christine Bremer-Moogley is an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau. She was a member of the Electoral College in 2008 and 2012. She was a superdelegate to the 2016 Democratic National Convention. Christine, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And full disclosure, Christine's law firm is a business sponsor of WPR. And Steve Prestigard is here. He is a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. Steve, welcome back to you.
Good morning. And I would like to wish everyone a belated, Memorial Day, Independence Day, Labor Day, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. In the 5 weeks since I was last on this show, I believe we have gone through all four seasons of the year. So belated whatever holiday.
You've covered your bases. Well, so this glass supplier, Corning, would appreciate incentives to locate near Foxconn's planned electronics factory in Racine County. And the director of the Marquette University Law School poll was on our program this week. Here's Charles Franklin laying it all out for us.
How do you give these incentives to one company, but then not give them to other companies that hold it up as a model and say, you know, you gave this deal to Foxconn, we want the same deal or we're not coming?
Christine, does Wisconsin need to cater incentives to other companies?
Well, I think I agree with Dana Walks, who's running for governor, when he says that this just shows the quicksand that Walker put us in when putting this deal together. Corning's CEO has now said, you know, we have to understand that in order for Foxconn to be successful, there has to be a glass plant within the grounds, right? That has to be, that was part of the deal. Everyone knew that. Now Corning says, well, we're not coming unless you give us $2 or you pay us $2 every $3 it costs to build a plant. Now think of that. And they want to keep 100% of the profits and revenue. That's what Corning is saying. And Corning is the premier glass manufacturing plant in the nation. There are no others that are not really in economic trouble. So if Corning is saying that, they've got Walker and Foxconn by the throat. You know, the contract, if people would pay attention, this is so complicated, and there's been so little public input on this, but if Foxconn actually gets these incentives, in order for Foxconn to share incentives that the state has given them, Foxconn can do that to bring in the glass plant. But under the contract, Foxconn must own 50% of any company that comes in. Now, what do you think the chances are that Corning's going to allow that? So, you know, this is a mess. And, you know, with Corning laying down its gauntlet and saying, nope, you know, you pay $2 out of every $3 we spend and we want 100% of the profits and revenue in order for our glass manufacturing plant to come in. What do you think that's going to do to this price? We're already, they promised us $3 billion. We're at $4.5 billion right now. And I can't imagine, Steve, that you can, as a conservative Republican, good guy who's a thinker and cares about our state, I cannot imagine that you think it's a good idea for us to spend that kind of risky investment and now with Corning coming in and saying we want all our money.
Well, Steve, does Corning have Wisconsin and Foxconn by the throat here? Do they have the upper hand, and does this set a precedent?
I'm going to use a football analogy. There's a guy, some of your viewers may not, or listeners may not know who this is. So there's a guy named Al Davis, who was kind of hated throughout the rest of the NFL, but he was the head of the Oakland and then Los Angeles and then Oakland Raiders. And one of his people said that we never say never, we never say always. We would rather do the right thing at a particular time than to be consistent, which is my way of saying that the fact that Wisconsin did this deal for Foxconn does not obligate Wisconsin to do deals for anybody else. This strikes me as being an issue between Foxconn and Corning, and not an issue between Corning and the state. It may well be that Corning is the premier glass manufacturer in the country. They are not the only glass manufacturer in the country, however, and every company has competitors. I'm sure Corning does, in fact, have competitors, and I think that a company that would like to move up in the market that Corning is presently in would jump at the opportunity that this may be presenting them. The other thing I have to point out, and I keep having to point this out because it doesn't apparently connect, is that this deal, none of this would be taking place if Foxconn wasn't coming to this state. If Foxconn was not coming to this state, this would not cost one single dollar of tax incentives, which are really reductions from the full tax that they would have to pay. There are people in economic development who know a whole lot more about economic development than I do and anybody listening to this show does. They believe it is a good deal. And that is why I think it is, in fact, a good deal, because the people who know this believe that that's the case.
Okay, deal aside, let's look at the environment. Much of southeastern Wisconsin is now exempt from federal limits on smog pollution. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt overruled agency staff. If a decision that saves Foxconn from having to commit to expensive improvements as it breaks ground very soon on the factory in Mount Pleasant, it creates a new source of pollution in the area, which already struggles with summer smog issues. So, Steve, is this the right call economically and environmentally?
Well, you know, their air quality issues have been issues for a couple of decades because of the EPA's determination that, aha, that is air pollution. I will tell you that this is exactly the sort of thing that people who voted for Trump voted for. Instead of having government stand in the way of business creating jobs and providing all the other benefits that business creates, to simply say that reducing, you know, or picking a number for whatever definition of pollution you want doesn't mean that you're making the environment better. What it does mean is that you're making compliance with that particular regulation more expensive. And I certainly believe that the people who supported Trump, many of which are probably in southeast Wisconsin, this is exactly the sort of thing, defanging the EPA. But defanging the EPA is exactly one of the reasons that they voted for Trump.
Well, Christine, are you concerned about the situation with air quality?
Absolutely concerned about it. When you think of the poor people in Racine, where the air is probably the worst in our state, we know that the pollution standards are extremely important. This smog, which is coming into the state, is real. I mean, you know, smog is from car tailpipes and power plants and from, volatile solvents and gas vapors. This is stuff that causes early death. 160,000 early deaths are caused by smog. This is from 2010 alone. 130,000 heart attacks and millions of people with asthma. So this is real, and I don't think the people that voted for Donald Trump, the people that love Wisconsin, the people that love our air and live here because of the quality of our life, expected that the EPA and Kathy Stepps, our beloved DNR director, who is now in the EPA in Chicago and running our state air quality standards, I don't think that they expected that Foxconn now, not only will they take our future away from us with this risky deal, but they're going to risk our air and our water. 7 million gallons of water a day is going to be taken out of our lake, out of Lake Michigan, by Foxconn. They're only going to return 4.3 million gallons, and they say they're going to treat it, but they don't even know what pollutants Foxconn's going to use, because we've never had a plant like this in our country before, so most of it isn't even regulated. I mean, what they're doing here with Scott Pruitt, our famous Scott Pruitt, EPA director, who is the $50 a night lobbyist apartment guy, who has purchased $1 million home on a $38,000 salary. This is a guy, Mr. Koch's champion in Oklahoma when he was attorney general, who fought then to do away with EPA standards. This is the guy in charge here. He's given Scott Walker a break. Scott Walker needed this. I think people should remember when Scott Walker, wait, I have to say this, Kate. When Scott Walker said that this Foxconn deal would be good for the state and they would follow the DNR regulations, he didn't tell us that behind the scenes he was trying to get the DNR regulations and the EPA regulations on air taken back. And so now he's going to say, well, we're following the EPA regulations because Scott Brewer did away with them.
So how should the governor address that on the campaign trail?
Well, the governor should be honest with people, and he should tell them that, yes, these EPA regulations are going to be changed, and the air doesn't stay in one place. It goes upwind and downwind, and all the smog that's being created by Foxconn is going to hit those poor people in Racine County. It's going to hit Milwaukee. It's going to be a real problem. Not only are we giving up our money and our future for this deal, which is risky, but we're also now saying we're going to pollute the lake. We're going to potentially change Lake Michigan forever. We're also going to allow people in Racine County to be subject to all kinds of health issues that are real and scientifically based.
Let's go to Charlie waiting in Platteville with thoughts on this. Charlie, hi. Hey, are you there, Charlie?
Hello?
Hey, go ahead.
Hey, I wanted to address a comment that was made just a few moments ago with regard to an arbitrary number that just some agency came up with for pollution. I think that's very blinded. And when he says that it's what Trump supporters want, well, Trump doesn't seem to be much of a supporter of scientific and objective information. And if you were to use that kind of logic, then we would never have child labor laws. We would never have any other pollution laws. I think it's a really blinded type of comment to make.
Well, Steve, does the EPA decision on pollution reflect poorly, or does that bode well for Governor Walker?
I don't think it's an issue that is going to change anybody's mind. Put it that way. I think we have seen certainly over the last 8 years that people who are supporters of Walker will support most of the things that he does, and people who hate Walker will, I don't care what he does, they will criticize him. It's very similar to Trump in this sense. I do have to say it is kind of illuminating. You know, we were talking briefly about the campaign trail this year, and I think it is interesting that that people who don't support this deal appear to believe that this state's economy is so great that we have historically low unemployment and finally high participation in the workforce and all those sorts of things, that under 8 years of Republicans running the show in Madison, that our economy is so great that we can take a project at 3,000 minimum jobs and say, nah, we're not interested. That's kind of an inadvertent endorsement of the Walker administration's economic policies over the last 8 years, to me anyway.
Well, John from Eau Claire called. He says he's concerned about the Foxconn facility in the wake of tearing down the GM plant in Janesville. John says it's a single-purpose plant. Technology will change rapidly. He says that technology will go away and will have an even bigger shell left behind after Foxconn. We need to move on now. Governor Walker attended Monday's Midwest Conservative Summit, and he talked about the election season and a potential blue wave. Here's what he says Republicans should do to avoid big wins for Democrats. Let's listen.
One, we've got to get Republicans, Republican-leaning voters, not just Republicans, right-of-center voters, motivated. And secondly, we've got to go and get those folks who are on the ground, the activists, the party faithful, the folks who've been key to our elections in the past, to go out and knock on even more doors, make even more personal connections.
So, Steve, are these strategies what Republicans need to do, knock on more doors?
Yeah, it's called the ground game, and you don't win elections merely by buying ads. You win by getting people to vote, and the best way to get people to vote is to personally contact them. He absolutely said the correct thing, and that's kind of like politics 101. That's not even intermediate level politics. You absolutely, in order to win a race, you have to get out and you have to draw your voters out.
Well, Christine, what do you make this week on a blue wave? Will Republicans be able to stave off a Democratic resurgence?
I think if the Republicans start knocking on doors, they're going to have a lot of doors slammed in their faces, to be frank with you. The people that I know up north here where I live, who were supporters of Donald Trump, are extremely disappointed with his conduct and would never tell me they would never vote for him again. You know, I think that the Democratic voters right now, I just went to one of our conventions up north for our party, and it was sold out. And that's going across the strait. The Democrats have never been more motivated, and they have good reason to be, because we have to do something to stop this conduct of Donald Trump that nobody is proud of. And I think that we've got record turnouts in these conventions. We won the special election in District 10 in the Senate. We're going to win other special election in Green Bay and Door County. We are going to take over back from the Republicans what they've done to our state, and it's all going to fall on Mr. Trump, who is responsible for leading the party. There is no way that the Republicans aren't going to suffer, and this blue wave is going to be a tsunami.
Well, a piggyback off of that, House Speaker Paul Ryan was back home here this week, attended that same conservative conference, and he noted that midterm elections are often not overly kind to the party in power. So how much of 2018 is destiny, Steve Prestigard, and how much do Democrats need to work if they expect to win?
The fact that Democrats hate Trump and Walker, which I think is hardly a surprise, doesn't really predict very much. I noticed, for instance, that at the beginning of this year, polls stated that the so-called generic Democrat had a double-digit lead in the Washington Post ABC News poll for Congress over generic Republicans. Well, the last poll that they took, which was 2 weeks ago, that lead has dropped by two-thirds to where it is, to where now they have, I believe it was a four-point lead. And from what I read, in order to succeed in congressional races, as an example, Democrats generally need a 6 to 8 point lead in that generic Democrat race, or generic Democrat versus generic Republican, poll. And that already has evaporated. I think anybody who predicts a blue wave or anything else 6 months out is not very educated. I think in the volatile environment that we are in right now, to even predict a result 6 days before the election is crazy. Remember, you know, how Hillary Clinton was waltzing right into the White House in late October 2016, and then she didn't. I think it's, of course, the fact is Republicans need to act as though they are behind. They have to knock on doors. They have to identify their voters. They have to get them out to the polls. That is, as I said, politics 101, and not original or anything like that, but that's how you win elections.
Well, regardless of what color you make it, like most weeks, we saw a wave of news. We're going behind the headlines, and we can review. Christine Bremer-Moogley, Steve Prestigard, stay with us. Christine is an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau. Steve Prestigard is a journalist and blogger. You can join in at 800-642-1234. So Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin was in the state this week to talk about the opioid crisis. What do you want to see come from Congress to address the opioid epidemic? How can she make a difference? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to it in two shakes here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. We are in the thick of Week in Review, breaking down the developments here at home in Wisconsin, national headlines in the mix as well. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You can join the roundtable, 800-642-1234. On the Mueller probe this week, 48 questions leaked that Special Counsel Robert Mueller wants to ask the president. Are you concerned about the leak? which the president says is disgraceful, or is this the new normal? You can call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. Christine Bremer-Moogley and Steve Prestigard are with us. Christine is an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau. Steve is a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. Let's move to Senator Baldwin in the state this week. She traveled around the state as she runs for re-election this fall, talking about the opioid crisis that topped her agenda. She says her mom suffered from chronic back pain and became addicted to painkillers. Let's listen.
And I remember sometimes being dropped off, and she would sleep most of the time that I was there. So I thought she was sick, and it's something that made her sleep. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She was probably passed out.
So, Steve, how should voters consider Baldwin's personal story as the nation stares down a prescription epidemic?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that It provides, you know, usually people think of U.S. senators as being off in Washington and not caring at all about their concerns because they'll make $200,000 a year. They're more or less guaranteed to be reelected. They have, you know, all of the perks that we working people who pay their salary through our taxes are providing them. This certainly humanizes that. Mm. The other person I think of in this circumstance is John Nygren, state representative from Northeast Wisconsin, who has a daughter who has had a very publicized heroin addiction. And I've had law enforcement tell me that, you know, in this particular part of the state, in a lot of rural areas in the state, the two problems drug-wise are heroin and methamphetamine. And prescription drugs are often a prescription painkillers are often a gateway to that. And it's a horrible problem in this state. It certainly helps provide some, you know, personal perspective for people who know people who are dealing with opioid addiction, that it's not just, it is people that are so-called famous or something like that, that have had this experience also.
Let's bring in Kirsten now in Beaver Dam. Hi, Kirsten.
Hi.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, I just wanted to make a comment that I'm a recovering addict who was a little over 20 years clean. And we had somebody call in to get some help. She had overdosed on heroin, which is an emergency room. After she was treated, there wasn't anywhere for her to go. So she had to go back to her parents' house, who actually gave her the heroin to begin with. We haven't heard from her since, not sure if she's passed away, but certainly she's back out there. And what would have prevented this possibly is more halfway houses. There's a lot of treatment facilities available to people here and there, lots of meetings for people to go to in Narcotics Anonymous. However, there isn't enough halfway houses for people to go to. As a matter of fact, there is a place called the Rogers Hotel in Beaver Dam where some people go, but there is a lot of drug trafficking in that building as well.
So, Kirsten, you wish to see more treatment options, more halfway houses, and certainly bring that to a federal level. Thanks so much for your call. Senator Baldwin has supported several bipartisan bills aimed at providing drug rehab and keeping illegal foreign drugs out of the country. She's also faced criticism, though, Christine, for her response to the overprescription of painkillers at the Tomah VA Medical Center. And a potential Republican opponent, Leah Vukmir, released a statement saying Baldwin knowingly put veterans in danger. So, Christine, is that criticism warranted?
I think that criticism from Leah Vukmir is just outrageous. It's just one of many outrageous things she said that has absolutely no factual background. Tammy Baldwin, by coming forward, she's a very private person, and I'm lucky enough to know her well. And, you know, Tammy Baldwin came forward with this very humanizing story about her mother, you know, which is very hurtful for her to even bring forward. And when you hear the story about how she as a child was raised by her grandparents,
because her mother was opioid addicted, suffered chronic pain. She'd go as a little kid to see her mother once a week on Saturdays. And her mother would be in bed because she was on opioids. And Tammy would have to leave her mother at the end of the day. And she was afraid that something would happen to her. And she had to deal with this all her childhood. If anyone has been scarred by the opioids crisis, it's been Tammy Baldwin. If there's anyone working hard to make certain that things like Kristen just told us don't occur again, it's Tammy Baldwin. Like you said, Kate, there have been two bills in Congress that are bipartisan that Tammy sponsored. Tammy is very interested in making certain that there are community-based solutions so that people addicted to opioids have somewhere to go when they're trying to kick the habit. And that is what we need to do. We have to get places in our communities funded so that people can go somewhere. Kirsten said, there's nowhere to go. So this billion-dollar bill, that funding bill that just came through, is based on making certain there are community-based solutions. And Tammy, as she's traveling across the state, going from Ashland, a facility in Ashland, all the way through the state, down even to Kenosha, is making certain that people know that there is funding coming and that there's help coming, and she is not going to give up. This is very dear to her heart, and it affected her throughout her life. Her mother just recently passed away, and she's really, really going to work hard. This is in her soul to make certain that this happens.
Let's go to Saeed joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Saeed.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that the question was asked was the comments by Volkmer were quite on the money, and the answer that you just gave, guest just gave, was quite misleading. Here's what happens when politicians fail in looking after the public good. Then they come up with a personal heart-tugging story that is supposed to make up for it. I'm sorry, I do feel bad for Mrs. Baldwin's mother, but I also feel very bad for all the veterans that were treated in the Toma VA when she was aware of what was going on there and did absolutely nothing. And people got overprescribed, and people died as a result of her incompetence in policy. I am very sorry about her mother, but that heart-tugging story does not compensate for her failure.
Saeed, thanks for calling in. Christine, follow up there.
May I respond?
Yes.
That's just, Saeed, that's absolutely false. That Tammy Baldwin would knowingly do nothing for veterans is just a statement that is used to try to inflame people when there's no factual basis behind it whatsoever. If Tammy Baldwin had known what was going on, then also Ron Johnson should have known, and every other elected representative. During an election year, it's easy to say that a failure in a huge organization based on some doctor's misconduct is all the fault of one senator. It's just not true. And when Tammy Baldwin became aware of the problem, she stepped forward with vigor, more than anyone else in Congress and the Senate. We haven't seen Ron Johnson or any other senator do what Tammy Baldwin is doing now. So what you're saying is false and misleading, absolutely false.
Well, we need to move on now because we have more ground to cover. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi told the Boston Globe on Tuesday that she'll run for Speaker, feels confident about it. Pelosi said it was important to have a woman in leadership, especially after Hillary Clinton's loss in the 2016 presidential contest. So, Christine, is Pelosi the right leader for House Democrats moving forward?
Well, Representative Crowley, who is leader of the House Democratic Caucus, has indicated he has no intention to challenge her. Nancy is one of the most gifted legislators that we've ever had in Congress, and that's why she stood at the top for this many years. There is no way this woman, who has fought all her life for progressive ideals and for the liberal process, or the liberal processes that we want to make certain our people are taken care of, is going to step down. I think it was pretty telling when she said, I'm not going to let there be only five white guys be at the table and no woman be at the table when I'm the one that can be there. She's a prolific fundraiser. She is very well respected, and she knows how to get things done. So there's no way that Nancy Pelosi is going to step down.
Well, Steve, does she accomplish enough as a woman in leadership to override the criticisms that she's gotten, about being part of that old guard?
Well, it's a little hard to tell because, you know, the House Minority Leader doesn't really have very much power because the House of Representatives, similar to every lower house, so to speak, in, I believe, every state in this nation, is a dictatorship of the majority party. I find it interesting. First off, I always find interesting when people talk about politicians by their first names. I don't. I also find it interesting the amount of upset and anger that Republicans have always had about Nancy Pelosi, largely because I think they believe that Nancy Pelosi looks down on everybody who doesn't share the same political beliefs that she does. Yeah, I understand that she represents one district in the incredibly liberal state of California, but the fact is that she is supposed to be doing things that represent the entire country, which she has not done. I think that she deserves a huge amount of credit, as a matter of fact, for flipping the House from her party, Democrat, to Republican after the 2010 elections. And I noticed that that has been an uninterrupted streak of Republican control since the time that she first became Speaker. So, but you know what? I'm not a Democrat. They're going to have whatever leaders they like.
Well, let's squeak in here 48 questions that leaked to the New York Times leaked this week, published about Special Counsel Robert Mueller wanting to pose those questions to President Trump. The notes include questions related to former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, former FBI Director James Comey, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, and campaign coordination with Russia. So, Steve, should we be concerned about this leak, or is that just a baseline expectation right now?
Well, of course it's a baseline expectation right now. Let's not forget that leaks go back at least, well, in my lifetime, at least as far as the Pentagon Papers in 1971. If you are a person who believes in disclosure and that there is too much secret government and government that's not part of the conducted in public, then you should favor leakers and you should favor journalistic efforts to ferret these things out. I do think, and let us be honest here, that anybody who believes that this is not one giant fishing expedition, whether or not it is a justified fishing expedition, are really not being honest. This is Mueller's trying to throw, and I won't use the scatological term, he's throwing stuff on the wall by looking at apparently everything that Trump has ever done during any sort of public life and seeing what is able to stick here.
Well,
but as far as leaks go, I'm not that concerned.
Christine, with your legal background, how should the legal team handle the questions like this in this situation? What did you make of these 48 questions?
Well, first of all, when Steve, you have a great habit of saying things like, anyone that doesn't believe this isn't a fishing expedition is not honest, and anyone that doesn't believe that uses polls is not educated. I think those are kind of amazing statements to come from someone like you, who's a political junkie. But regardless, with regard to these questions, it seems to me, and it's been reported, that there were topics that were given to Jay Sekulow, Trump's lawyer, and he took those topics and formed questions. And it was likely that it was Jay Sekulow who leaked, or someone in the White House who leaked these questions, because the way the questions are written were certainly written, in a way that probably wouldn't come out of Mueller's team. You know, with regard to the questions, I think they're, you can see just the opposite of what you said, Steve. This is not a fishing expedition. This is a very detailed list that gives you the opportunity to see how targeted Mueller's probe has been. So if you look at those 48 questions and you look at, they're looking at the motivations of Trump for firing Comey, for the issues with regard to Flynn's firing, for the issues with regard to the 2016 Trump Tower meeting. These are all issues that are very directed toward what happened in the campaign and what happened afterwards to try to stop people from finding out these people were colluding with Russia, if they were, or obstructing justice. So I think it's a very, very targeted message. Mueller has incredible attorneys working for him. And the people that come out of the sessions after they have been questioned say that it's like, it's like going into a sauna and getting whipped with branches. It's very, very difficult. The questioning is very directed, and most of the questions that are asked, the attorneys know the answers to. So I think this is a very targeted investigation, and, you know, I don't know about you guys, but it's like being whipsawed every night when you come home from work and try to keep up with all this as to what's going on. But, you know, when you read through these questions, I didn't find anything that surprised me, and they were all areas that we knew that Miller was supposed to look into and that he is looking into.
Well, let's close this with thoughts from Marion in Madison. Go ahead, Marion.
I guess I'd just like to piggyback on what the female caller or the female guest is saying, is to say that this is a fishing expedition. I've been an investigator of crimes for the last 13 years of my life, and what Mueller is doing is following leads that are coming forth. I would have to agree that it's very targeted, and I find it naive, and I would use a lot of other words, but I'm not going to. The way the male caller has made these blanketing statements about people who don't agree, I find that very condescending and actually quite ignorant of what investigations actually are. I don't think he's ever done any. Thanks for your time, and thanks for the female caller's comments. I very much appreciate her statements.
Well, Steve, let's give you, though, the last word here.
Gee, thanks. You know, condescending kind of describes that last phone call, but she's entitled to her own opinion. I will freely admit, I have never been a police officer. I have 2400 vision, and there is no police agency that would hire me, and for good reason. I hate to tell everybody this, listening to this, but believe it or not, there are people who get up in the morning, go to work, come home at night, and do not sit in front of the news and get every last detail about what Mueller and his investigators are doing. They're not lawyers, they're real people. And they might be wondering why in the world all of this attention is being paid to Trump with, at this point, nothing substantial. Nothing's like, where's the chart? You know, where has Trump committed a crime at this point? They're trying to find it, obviously. I gather that they're probably going to spend, well, let's see, when's the 2020 election, that November? They're literally going to spend the entire time of Trump's term in office or first term in office looking at this stuff. I won't say most people, but there are a lot of people that really
sounds like that buzzer is telling us that it's time to go, or that phone there. Steve, finish up quickly. We got to go to break.
Yeah, well, that's it. I seriously wonder where this is all going. And, you know, the fact is, it does look like a fishing expedition to people who are not lawyers.
All right. Well, on this fishing opener, we're clipping along through Week in Review, getting up to speed on what the week brought forth. Steve Prestigard, Christine Bremer-Moogley, you as well at the table, 800-642-1234. On the topic of North Korea, what should America expect from negotiations with North Korea? Do you think the country's leaders can build consensus? President Trump says the release of three Americans imprisoned there is imminent. Is this a triumph for the administration? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation in just a moment on the Ideas Network. On a Friday, it's Week in Review, where we break down the headlines and pose the thorny issues to guests from different political perspectives. Steve Prestigard is a journalist and blogger. Christine Bremer-Moogley is an attorney. Getting your thoughts on what came of this week at 800-642-1234. Adult film actress Stormy Daniels is back in the headlines. Is this something you followed out of the Trump administration and his personal attorneys? You can call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Ned in Mazanie has been waiting so long on this. Ned, go ahead.
Yes, the American people deserve to be told the truth by the president, no matter what their politics are. Previously, President Trump, when asked, did he know that Michael Cohen was making the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels on Air Force One, he said no. This can't be true because President Trump was paying Michael Cohen back the hush money over several months. to avoid detection. This is called structuring, and structuring is a felony. Structuring is illegal because it gets around the law. The American people deserved better than this, and they deserve to be told the truth by the president.
So in the context here, on Wednesday, former New York mayor and member of the Trump legal team, Rudy Giuliani, said the president reimbursed attorney Michael Cohen for a settlement with the adult film actress. And here he is speaking with Sean Hannity of Fox News.
Having something to do with paying some Stormy Daniels woman $130,000, I mean, which is going to turn out to be perfectly legal. That money was not campaign money. Sorry, I'm giving you a fact now that you don't know. It's not campaign money. No campaign finance violation.
So they funneled it through the law firm.
Funneled through the law firm, and the president repaid it.
Okay, so Steve, the president last month said he didn't know about the payment. What does this change? How would you address what Ned is saying here?
Do you realize how ridiculous it is that we are discussing a porn star and the president? I mean, that I am not, again, a lawyer. I thought it was an interesting revelation. Gee, those are the sorts of things that might make you watch Hannity, believe it or not, which I do not watch. But as far as this goes, I hate to tell you this, but there is a long line, I believe, of people who say one thing when referring to a legal matter, and then at some point in, weeks later or months later, suddenly it turns out that the reverse is true. Actually, there were four words that came out that people who have followed politics as long as I have or longer might think of. Remember the phrase, no controlling legal authority? That kind of, for whatever reason, popped up in my head. But as far as people's opinion about this, I don't think it changes anything. I think that people who support Trump believe, strangely enough, that, you know, like Democrats who were falling all over themselves supporting Bill Clinton during his impeachment issue, that it's, you know, it didn't take place when he was president, and that it's a private matter. Remember all those phrases?
Well, let's toss this over to Christine. Is this a new problem for the president?
Absolutely is a new problem. And when you say things like we're talking about a porn star, it's another kind of a condescending comment about women. I'm not supposed to call Nancy Pelosi Nancy, I guess. And now we've got you talking about a porn star when we're talking about a woman who had the courage to step up when she realized the president of the United States was actually lying to people. And, you know, to defame her isn't getting us anywhere. We had Trump this week, we learned, that Trump's doctor didn't write his health report. We learned that that he fired his whole legal team after telling the American people he was very happy with them. And that we learned that although he told us very clearly from Air Force One, which we pay for him to ride on, that he did not know about the $130,000 payments to Michael Cohen. And Ned is absolutely right. We deserve a president not to lie to us. Now, as a lawyer, I will tell you, but Giuliani's comments were, I'm sure that every lawyer across the country who heard what Giuliani said had their mouth just drop open, because we are governed by very strict rules about commingling payments. When we receive retainers, those retainers are for legal services, work that we do. That's how lawyers get paid. We get paid for work. We actually get paid for the work we do. And people don't give us money to commingle with our fees and say, well, maybe you should pay out some of my debts or my obligations with that money. That's not appropriate, and it's not allowed under ethical rules in Wisconsin or in New York. You cannot do that. That's violating the trust account. That's violating the ethical rules of our practice. So when Giuliani, who apparently hasn't practiced law for a long, long time, never really practiced, for private people, I guess he's got some very rich people that he does these things for, at least that's what he tells us, when he talks like that, you know, lawyers across the country are saying, what are you talking about? That's not what lawyers do. So, you know, this whole idea of what he did here is an absolute violation of election law. If Trump paid himself, if he paid that money during 2017 while he was president, then he had an obligation of more than $10,000, which under federal rules must be reported. His 2017 report
did not say anything about a debt owing of over $10,000. So he violated that.
Well,
moreover, so you just can't do it. He's violating election law, and they're lying to us.
Well,
so,
Giuliani,
this is a big problem.
Giuliani is also talking about North Korea. He says the release of three Americans imprisoned by Kim Jong-un is imminent. The president also tweeted about the prisoners. So, Christine, would this be a triumph for the Trump administration as the North Korean dictator prepares to meet with the American president?
Kate, do you mean is it a triumph to let prisoners go?
Or is this a triumph of the Trump administration figuring out a way to work a deal with North Korea?
Well, if he figures out a way to work a deal with North Korea, we should all credit him. There's no question about that. I mean, the most important thing about all of this stuff is if Trump can stop North Korea from deploying or having the capability to deploy a nuclear weapon against any country, including, of course, our American cities. If he can do that and is willing to go there and make a deal and force a deal and walk away if we don't get it, because North Koreans have never come forward on any of the deals that have been attempted in the past, if Trump can do it, boy, we should all credit him. I have absolutely no problem with that.
Well, the South Korean president says President Trump deserves a Nobel Peace Prize for his work with North Korea and moving toward denuclearization. Let's hear from Mandy in Land O'Lakes. Hi, Mandy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. At this point, I feel like it's incredibly premature to credit Trump with anything in regards to North Korea, because I haven't seen anything that suggests that we've done anything diplomatically other than saber rattle on Twitter, which is a horrifying way to look at diplomacy. I think we're looking at a correlation versus causation fallacy and giving him any credit and any progress that has been made. And I think it's taking away from the actual work that both North Korea and South Korea and China have done to get us to this point to even have this discussion.
Mandy, thanks for calling in. Steve, quickly here as we start to wrap up, is a Nobel Prize in the cards for President Trump?
Absolutely not. There is no way he's going to get the Nobel Peace Prize because of, you know, people hate Trump on an international level. I personally don't believe the Nobel Peace Prize has meant a single thing ever since Yasser Arafat won it, which was just a complete obscenity. But you have to admit, I mean, who actually did see this coming? I don't think that this was predicted by anybody that all of a sudden, out of nowhere, North Korea would start backing away from attempting to involve the entire Korean Peninsula, I should say, in a nuclear war and taking out whatever collateral damage they could add from that. I have to say I'm a little baffled that it's taken place. I think that caution and skepticism is in fact warranted.
And we'll have to leave it right there.
Deep.
Yeah, thank you. Steve Prestigard, Christine Bremer-Mogley, who is an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau. Steve Prestigard, journalist and blogger. The Morning Show, this edition of Week in Review, is produced by Keely Boltina and Brianne Chasso. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network. Have a great weekend. We'll meet you back on Monday.